All members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary purpose is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to connect to an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Terry. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. Our first 10-minute speaker is Meg S.
Hi, I'm Meg. I'm an alcoholic. Am I allowed to do that? My sobriety date is February 23rd, 2014. Oh, I'm crying already. God darn it. Today is 8 years, and, thank you to the secretary for asking me to speak and to giving birth to me. Pretty into that one. I know that she tends to pick people on when it's their birthdays, because she really likes to like ramp up the emotions, and well, it's worked. My sponsor is Teresa M. She's here. This is my first sobriety date. I hope it is my last sobriety date, and I believe that it can be if I continue to do all the things that I've done for the past 8 years. Pacific Group has shown me that you can come here and you can stay, and that it also showed me that you can come here and you can leave and you can come back. I was thinking a lot today about what it was like 8 years ago today, and it was really sad. I went to a 12-step meeting of another program because I didn't think alcohol was my problem, and I sobbed and sobbed through that meeting. And then I went to a Korean spa with my sponsor in that program, which is actually super weird. I'm like, that's really weird. But, I didn't have boundaries back then. So, and then I went to a play. But before I went to the play, I went to a restaurant, a bar with myself. And I was at a happy hour, and I got an email from the man that I was dating. And he told me everything that I had done the night we last went out, which was February 21st, 2014. And he told me every single thing that I did in my blackout. And he's a very detailed-oriented person. And it was, like, very calmly stated, every single thing that I did. Which was, I tried to get out of a vehicle while it was moving. Yeah, that's right. But don't worry, I had my seatbelt on, so it was fine. I remember that night, he said to me, like, we should just go. And I remember being like, no, this is the best night of my life. Give me your alcohol now. Like, my favorite drink is your drink. My favorite drink was a vodka Diet Coke, which is no one's favorite drink. What I did there was, like, I was nervous. Like, I'm really nervous right now. I want you all to love me. I want no one to drink ever again. And then be like, it's because of you, Meg. Like, that is what I want. I've done inventory, some of that. I wanted to have a great night, and I was scared, and I was scared about what people thought of me because I was at that guy's work party. And there was a light-up dance floor, and it was, like, amazing, and I was nervous. And they were out of mixers, so that didn't matter to me because I just want the alcohol. And I drank it and drank it, what he explained to me was then I tried to get out of the car. I started throwing books when I got to his apartment. I started throwing books at him. I started begging him to love me. We've been dating 6 weeks. Like, that's what it was like. And then I locked myself in his bathroom and started sobbing on the floor. And I really don't remember any of those things. And I didn't like that email that I got. But I didn't drink when I was in that bar. And when I went to the play, and I went to the after party for the play because it was the last night, someone's handed me some champagne. And I carried it around in my hand for an hour. And I've never done that in my life. Like, I like shots. I want to drink it now. I've had shots. I throw up. I'm on the bar. And then I drink shots again. Like, that is what I wanted. And it wasn't because I had too much. It's like I drank it too fast. So I had that champagne in my hand. And I had the thought, nothing good came of what was in that glass. And I put it down. And I didn't mean to get sober that day. I absolutely did not want to be a member of this group. I didn't want to be an Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought I had a drinking problem. I thought I blacked out. I thought I was super fun. And honestly, I was, but not all the time. And certainly not that night. And I haven't had a drink since then. And that's because of AA. I would not be here. I would not have the life I have if it wasn't for AA and all the examples. So I know I've talked a lot about my last day, but yeah, I grew up, I am from LA. I grew up here. You are all my babysitters. I mean, it's not your fault that I'm here, but given my heritage, it is technically my mom's fault because it is an inherited disease, but and I'm so grateful for it. Like, I'm so grateful to be an alcoholic because I get AA. I get all of you. I get people wishing me happy birthday, calling me, texting me, saying that at the door. I didn't have that on February 23rd, 2014. I had me, like, by myself and sad. People barely wanting to speak to me. And so when I started drinking when I was about 20, so I was like an actual late bloomer. A lot of people and I are like, I was a late bloomer. I was 12. Like, I really was. I was a senior in college and I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And I also lived this like wild life of like, you know, dancing on tables. And I always was sober doing all that. I was straight edge. And because I wanted to be better than you, I thought if I don't drink, I'm better than you are. And so I went all through high school and I went all through college without drinking. It was so important to me. And then the summer before my senior year, I went with a bunch of people I didn't know to Vegas, and I was on the 15 freeway and someone handed me a bottle of vodka in a water bottle, and I drank it. And then everything about my life and what I thought about myself changed like that. And I couldn't get back to that person till I came to AA. I drank for like 11 more years. Clearly my dating history was, if you can imagine, not awesome. I did a lot of time in the improv comedy scene, and the stand-up comedy scene, which is actually much sadder. I'm just like very sad. It was like my real bottom. I just drank for 11 years, and I drank with a lot of people who drink a lot more than I did. You know, if you're new, Daniela, I met someone today with one day. If you're new, like, I don't know how much you drank. A lot of people drank a lot more than I did. But when I drank, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know where I was going to be. I didn't know who I was going to end up with. And then I drank till that night. And then that couple days later, after I got that email, I called Kim S. and I gave her a call today, and I thanked her again because I thank people who helped me get sober on my sobriety birthday, because that's what my former sponsor, Kitty Brin, whose jacket I'm wearing, told me to do. And I called Kim S. and what Kim S. said to do was to not drink for 30 days, right? If someone someone offers you a drink, write how it makes you feel, and go to one AA meeting a week, which seems crazy to me now, because because I go to AA meetings all the time, and I could not imagine doing this one meeting a week. I wouldn't want to. I love all you. I mean, some of you, but it's okay. And that's what she told me to do. And she told me to listen for the similarities, not the differences. But I didn't listen for the similarities. I listened for the differences. And that's okay, because I still eventually heard the similarities. And my mom called me when I had 20-something days. And I remember I said, I didn't drink like all these people. I didn't drink every single day. And what she said to me was, I didn't drink every single day. But when I did, I drank. And I embarrassed myself, and I wanted to stop embarrassing myself. And that, for me, she was the first person who I identified with, and that is AA, and that is the magic of one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And then I started hearing people that I identified with, but I didn't know it was going to be my mom. I didn't know it was the person that I had seen stay sober my entire life. It's like, you just, you know, like, you don't know who you're going to help. And she didn't mean to help me, but she did. And I called her sponsee, and she helped me. And then her former sponsee, Kitty Brynn, helped me change my life. And I got to call her today and thank her. And she told me, and I just want to say this thing, is she told me not to date until I had gone through the steps, because I had nothing to offer anyone until I had gone through the steps. And I say that, and I did it. And I think it's important for women to hear that, because I've seen women go out, and I've seen women die. And I did that, and I have a really different experience. So thank you so much for my life. I'm so grateful.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Thomas S.
My name is Thomas Sells, and I'm an alcoholic. It's not my birthday, but Mary asked me to share anyway, so I'll make like it's my birthday. Thank you, Meg. I appreciate the opportunity to share at my home group. This group, as well as Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, is very dear to me. I am the youngest of my mom, bore 12. And in an era in which not every child born came home, many were named, some came home for a while, but it was an era of low birth rates, and so bore 12 and 7 survived into adulthood. But in my lifetime at home, I never opened the refrigerator and saw a six-pack or a fifth or a bottle of anything. I never, in my lifetime, in my mom and dad's lifetime, ever saw them take a drink. I never heard my mom or dad ever use profanity. I never saw my father raise his voice to my mother, nor would any of the kids ever have thought to raise their voice to my mom either, because my dad was a big man, 6'5", 250, and he believed in capital punishment. My father was a Methodist minister, and by all rights, everything that should have been provided, needed to be provided, was provided. And it was a kind and loving and nurturing home. Every one of my brothers and sisters have college degrees. One of my brothers has four bachelor's, two master's, and a PhD, and that was the guideline. My mom and dad both had master's degrees in the early 1920s, when most African Americans did not have high school diplomas. My father studied at seminary at Northwestern University in, out of Chicago, Illinois, which is still to this day one of the major universities in this country. So by all rights, you would never believe in those days that here is where I would be. And in addition, everyone figured that I would follow in my father's footsteps and go into the ministry. And I used to mimic his sermons on Sunday afternoons and have all of my older brothers and sisters be my audience, and mom used to make them sit still and listen to me. But I knew that I did not have the moral makeup to follow in his footsteps, because my father, along with being a religious man, was a spiritual man and an honest man. And I have never been, until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, any of those things. Now, it did start off small, just a little stealing from dad's pocket when he took a nap. I never missed an opportunity in a supermarket to slip a candy bar in my pocket. But these were traits that were going to grow and manifest themselves as I got older. And then came the piece to resistance. Now, I came out to California from Newark, New Jersey, toughest city I've ever seen in my life. I came out to California in the spring of 1963 to go to college, play some basketball, and enjoy life, and all I did was drink. I did not factor in the fact that at the end of the first year, I was going to have to show the coach some credits, and in my first year, although I played basketball, I did not complete one credit. So I joined the service. I did not tell anyone. I did not tell my mom and dad. And furthermore, in 1964, when I joined the service, I did not know the country was at war. But what completed the necessity for me to be here in Alcoholics Anonymous was that immorality and lack of character manifested itself on that battlefield to the 10th degree. I never anticipated in my life that at a young man under the age of 21, actually I turned 21 on the battlefield, that I would have ever have to look a man, a woman, a child, or an animal in the eye and take their life. And if you think you can do that without having some kind of reinforcement to quiet your mind, then I can tell you with a surety you've never done it before. It is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to shoot into the woods and never see anybody. But it's another thing to look a human being in the eye and pull the trigger. And so, with that lack of spiritual nature and moral character, ultimately, Alcoholics Anonymous was the only place for me to go. When I came back from the war, And I tried to see professionals and tell them what my problems were. Before I could ever get started, I was always told to stop, because if you go any further, we will have to report you. There are certain things apparently you cannot tell psychiatrists and psychologists, and I didn't know that. And so in 1987, I was like a cat trying to have sex with a skunk. In other words, I didn't get all I wanted, but I got all I could stand. And I crawled into Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not know what Alcoholics Anonymous was, but I have learned and lived a great deal in these rooms around the world. And it is, as I have discovered, an amazing place. Now, I've had three sponsors in the past, and my current sponsor is sitting in this room, which, if you have a sponsor and if you use your sponsor, being in the same room with your sponsor is a comforting thing. So, my first sponsor, Vince Bailey, helped me to understand the rules of the road, tradition, format, etc. And to learn how to be honest, but he said something that allowed me the opportunity to do what it was that I needed to do. He said, be as honest as you can be. And little by little, I became more honest. He moved away, Vince Yo took my case. And he had an experience which was wonderful for me to follow, because I had a child out in this universe who I had never claimed, and so did he. And I was able to watch him and follow that and learn from it. And then Clancy took my case following them. And Clancy talked me into staying into Alcoholics Anonymous because I was about to leave. I had a very dear and close relative who was drugged behind a truck until his eyes popped out of his head in a hate crime in Texas. And I was ready to leave. And Clancy knew exactly what to say to me and why. And I have been able to stay. And now I am here, and I've got Tim Kruger as a voice of reason and collaboration in my sober life. Thank you.
Thank you. Our main speaker tonight is Steve L.
Steve, I'm an alcoholic. I'm sorry, I'm easily amused, but I saw this young lady come up here, and I told Lulu, I said, this is like the AA version of a fluffer. She comes up between, it's just... I'm sorry. Thank you, Meg, and thank you, Thomas. I really appreciate that, and thanks, Mary, for inviting me to share. It's always an honor and privilege to share in Alcoholics Anonymous, and especially here in front of this group. I always get a lot of support here. Lulu leaned over before I came up and said, don't suck. Appreciate that. Dave W., who's my classmate, said, oh, talk as long as you want, an hour and a half. It'll be no problem. They'll love it, you know. And Marty made sure to tell me that he'll be up there judging me, so I appreciate that. But, yeah, Thomas talked about a lot of people, and he talked about Clancy, and it's hard for me not to look out and see him. And, I could always remember Clancy's birthday. And Meg talked about having an ego, and if you haven't noticed, I've got an ego, and I think pretty much everybody in the room does. And the way I will remember Clancy's AA birthday is it was October 31st, 1958. I remember that because my natal birthday is October 30th, 1958. So I was born the day before Clancy Imslin got sober. And because I have an ego, the way I like to think of it, and I told Clancy this, and he liked this, is I said a little over 2,000 years ago, there was a child born, a very special child. They called him the carpenter, and he eventually was the genesis, really, of a really big religion. And when he was born to signify his birth, a star rose in the east. And a little less than 2,000 years later, when I was born, Clancy Imslin was thrown out of the midnight mission in the west. So that's how I remember that. My sobriety is July 27th, 1996. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave. The support is just touching. It really is. And I've been consecutively sober since I got here, but that wasn't the plan. That wasn't the design. I got here on a court card. I got popped for a DUI. I remember I got pulled over. I had done the alphabet backwards. I was having a conversation with a highway patrol officer. I thought we were bonding. I thought it was going pretty well. And then he asked me a question that to this day I think is still unfair. He asked me, what freeway are you on? Yeah, I'm busy. I'm not paying attention to that. I guessed wrong. I said the 405. Apparently, I was on the 91. Like it's never happened to you, okay? And so I got hauled off to jail, and I got sentenced to go to 6 AA meetings in 6 months, which I thought was excessive. And I didn't want to go, and... The first thing I noticed when I came here was you were telling my story. The facts and circumstances were different, but it was the same story. This inability to control and enjoy my drinking, this strange allergic reaction that I had to alcohol where I just got thirstier when I drank it, coupled with the fact that once I stopped drinking it, I just started thinking and thinking and thinking. And the more I thought, the more I wanted to drink, this mental obsession. And I understood that. I'm the kind of alcoholic that my wife will send me out to get milk. It's really not a complicated task. There's a couple subparts to it. You got to leave the house. You got to go to the store. You got to buy the milk, and you got to come home with the milk. You got to come home with the milk, right? And I'm pretty good at the first two or three subparts, but what happens is, I run into one of you people, right? And like Sharon, and Sharon will say to me something rather benign, like, would you like to have a beer? Well, of course I'd like to have it. It's like a basic food group, right? It's not even really drinking, right? So I have a beer. But because I have this allergic reaction to alcohol, I get thirstier. How you doing? It's good. Don't worry, we're watching you. We'll wait. I get thirstier. And that doesn't satisfy me because I'm an alcoholic. So I need an accelerant. I need tequila. So I'm drinking beer, shooting tequila, and 3 days later I come to. I used to call it time travel. I now realize it's just blacking out. It's a skill set that many of us have. Apparently Meg has it. And non-alcoholics are not impressed with it. We kind of like it. It saves a lot of time. We meet interesting people. It's not that big a deal. And I'm selfish and I'm self-centered, but I'm not entirely inconsiderate. So when I come to after 3 days, I realize, oh man, I got to go get the milk. So I run to the store, and I buy the milk, and I come home to my wife. I'm like, hey, baby, I got the milk. And I'm all proud of myself because I just completed the task, and it feels like I just left, right? She, on the other hand, is not annoyed. She's like seriously pissed off because I've been gone for 3 days, and I don't understand what the problem is because I'm delusional. I have a problem understanding what's going on. Reality and me don't get along very well, and you're upset with my drinking, she's upset with my drinking, everybody's upset with my drinking, and I got to stop drinking. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to meetings, and people are telling me things like, don't drink and go to meetings. Meetings, meetings, meetings. Meeting makers make it. All of which is good practical advice. But it's not really the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not the 12 steps. Now, there were people that were talking about the 12 steps. They were talking about the program, the book. They were talking about a sponsor, which is a guide. Thomas talked about it, that takes you through this process. And they were talking about a higher power, which is the point of the exercise. But I'm not drinking. You know, I'm not like an extra credit guy. The last thing I want to do is get over sober, right? I'm not, you know, I don't want to overreact. And people are telling me, you know, don't leave before the miracle. So I'm sitting there waiting for the miracle. And the miracle is not happening. You know, I'm just getting worse and worse and worse. I'm just a jerk. I'm a jerk at home. I'm a jerk at work. I'm a jerk at meetings. I come into meetings and people are telling me, old timers are telling me, just sit in the corner and for God's sakes, don't talk to any newcomers because they still have hope. You know, it was pretty grim. And I went about 100 days stark, raving sober, and I finally, I went on a business trip and I kind of had a meltdown on the business trip. And I came back from this business trip and I got up in the morning and I got out. I was in the Army. You know, Thomas talked about the military, and I was in the Army for 13 and a half years. I went through airborne school, I went through Ranger school, I went through Special Forces selection and assessment. I served as a Green Beret for a while. I spent a combat tour over in Beirut in 1983. I was in Desert Storm. You know, we invaded Panama. Eventually, they sent me to law school. When I got out of the Army in 1993, I was a major. I was a JAG. And my job was I was the intelligence oversight advisor for the United States Army, which should concern you. And when I got out in 1993, I got sober in 1996. And when I left the Army, I had a kit bag. We call it a go bag. I had some stuff in there that I had neglected to turn in when I left the Army. And I didn't think of it as stealing. I hadn't read the book yet. I didn't know anything about this rigorous honesty stuff. And I just kept the stuff because I thought it might come in handy one day. And today's the day. I had some weapons and some demolition. I had 13 passports. And these passports had my photograph, different names from different countries that I'd used. And in 1993, when I got out of the Army, I didn't turn it in. And my newcomer plan, if you're new, you've got a newcomer plan. We all have newcomer plans. And my experience is we think they're brilliant. We do. I did. I thought mine was brilliant. My experience is that newcomer plans are shrouded in a cloud of stupidity that the creator of the plan cannot possibly fathom. So if you're new and you've got a newcomer plan, my suggestion is that you get with somebody after the meeting and tell them your newcomer plan. And hopefully after they stop laughing, you know, they'll dissuade you from executing your newcomer plan. But mine was brilliant. What I was going to do is I was going to take my blue passport that has that the government issues to all citizens. It's got my photograph, my name. I'm going to leave the country. I'm going to fly to British Columbia. When I get to British Columbia, I'll start flipping passports, flipping identities. I'll go over to Europe for a week or two. I'll come back to British Columbia. Steve Lamb will cease to exist. Now, I have a wife and I have a daughter, but this, did you snort? I'm not judging, I'm just reporting. You need to stay here. Snorting is a real sign of alcoholism. I'm just telling you that right now, okay? So my newcomer plan is I'm gonna leave, right? And I'm not gonna tell my wife and daughter because it's a career move and they're not involved, right? And then I'm going to head down to Costa Rica because I've got some former Army associates of mine that are just doing some kind of interesting marketing and distribution down there. So that's my newcomer plan, right? And I lay all this stuff out. And the 13 passports that I should have turned in 1993 are all current. They have not expired. But my blue passport has expired. And I'm not laughing because this is not funny and I'm devastated. I don't know what to do. I went to a meeting and I met a guy named Jim and without my consent, he became my grand sponsor because I made the mistake of saying to him, I've been around about 100 days. I said, you know, Jim, I've been around about 100 days. I think it's time that I should interview for a sponsor. Now, the people that I know that sounds stupid, but you got to understand my perspective. What I'm hearing is you're telling me find somebody that has what you want. Well, I don't know about you, but I got a complex set of social issues. Not anybody can sponsor this, right? And I should be able to interview this person because I can obviously ascertain the appropriate sponsor for me. Jim heard all this and he went, you are pathetic. And he took me by the shoulder and he took me outside and introduced me to a guy I'd never met before. He said, Michael, Steve, Michael, sponsor, sponsee, go with God. And he walked away laughing. And I'm not, this is not funny. This is not funny and I'm, But Michael's all excited because he's just been delivered a new fish. He reaches in his pocket. He gets out a piece of paper. He writes his address, his phone number. He tells me to show up at his house Monday night at 6:30. Bring my big book and my 12 and 12. He wants me to read the first chapter of the 12 and 12, which is on the first step. And he wants me to read from the very beginning of the big book through the doctor's opinion. And he tells me to highlight what I agree with, what I disagree with, make notes in the margin. If I've got questions, we'll talk about it when I show up. Now, for a long time, I thought Jim was trying to help me. And I think he was to a certain degree. But I learned later that what was going on was Michael was coming up on 5 years. He was having work problems. He was having marital problems. He had sponsees that were not following direction. And Jim saw me and thought, oh, this hot mess is perfect. And he took me out and he gave me to Michael and basically said, here, play with this. This will keep you entertained for a while. Because the reality is, these sponsees are a divine distraction. They get us out of self and into God. You know, it's one of these remarkable things. If you've sponsored for a while, the first thing that you'll notice is they will call you. And usually, out of some sense of politeness, they'll ask you how you're doing. They don't care. They don't care. They go right into whatever the problem of the day is. And at first, it's annoying. But then you realize that you're having a conversation with them, and you're not thinking about yourself. And it's just a relief. And then one day they'll get a sponsee and they'll call you to talk about the sponsee that they're working with that they need some help on. And you'll spend 20, 30 minutes on the phone and you realize neither one of you talked about yourselves. And I don't know what your idea of a conscious contact is, but that fits mine. And that's relief. And so, I show up at his house. I've done my homework. I got my books. And he asked me a little bit about myself. I tell him about my newcomer plan. He tells me a little bit about himself, and then he says, okay, open the book, let's start reading. I said, no, I did what you asked me to do. I did the homework. I'm ready to discuss it, like you said. He said, no, open the book, we're going to read. I said, no, really, and I showed him the book. I've got the highlighting, I had some stuff written down, and he's like, oh, no, that's not what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we're going to go through this book from the very beginning all the way to the end. We're going to go word by word, line by line, paragraph by paragraph, page by page, through the whole book. And I thought, oh my God, this is a level of lameness that I never thought was possible. This is pathetic. And because I'm judgmental, I figured, he probably can't read. You know, he probably can't read. You know, but I've been beaten into a state of reasonlessness. I got nothing. So I figure I'll read with him, and I think, you know, maybe I can help the guy get sober, right? You know? I found out later that my sponsor has a master's degree in nuclear engineering. He was the chief architect for one of the largest gaming companies in the world. He's younger than me. He's been retired for quite some time. He's doing fine, and he certainly doesn't have a problem with reading. But I thought he was an idiot for a long time. I really did. And what happened was we went through this book. And when we got to a prayer, we said the prayer, we got to a step, we worked the step, and it saved my life. And I was convinced it wouldn't work. And if you're new and you're thinking it's not going to work, I'm not trying to be mean or cruel, but we really don't care what you think. We really don't. We're going to make an assumption that your thinking is screwed up. In fact, on page 23 of the book, it says the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind. You know, I've never met anybody that's come into Alcoholics Anonymous and looked up on the wall and seen the 12 steps and gone, oh, thank God. I've been waiting my whole life for this. John, will you take me through these 12 golden steps of recovery so that I can find, develop, and maintain a conscious contact with the God of my understanding so I can live and move and have my being in the world without drinking alcohol or doing any of the party favors that some of you do that I'm not going to talk about tonight, but I know you do them. And no, we don't do that. We look at that, we're like, are you kidding me? That's it? That's the plan of recovery? I mean, I'm a lawyer. You know, 4 and 5? That's like confession and evidence. We're not. No. And if you're new, that's not the bad part. You snorted again. The bad part is it's 8 and 9. 8 and 9. Now, I'm not stupid. I know it's their money. I know it's their money. But some of them don't even know I've got it. And how is me giving them their money going to help me get sober? I mean, I come in here, I need the money step. You know, there is no money step. The book says the spiritual always precedes the material. Crap, you know. That is both the bad news because I'm stupid and the good news because I'm new and I have no idea until I have this experience. And none of this stuff makes any sense in my experience looking forward. It only makes sense looking backwards. And I got to tell you, I'm not an authority in AA. I wasn't appointed. I wasn't anointed. I'm just the person that Mary asked to come and tell his story tonight. We're a society of storytellers. Everybody's got their story. You're here to have your experience, not my experience. And I got it through the steps. And I'm going to talk about a few of them in particular. I remember that I was really confused about the fourth step. I was hearing all these people tell me that, you know, you had to write this long life story and everything, and I didn't do that. And my suggestion is to follow whatever direction your sponsor gives me. My sponsor knew that I'm a wordsmith, I'm a pain in the butt, and my sponsor knows that, so he took me to page 65, and he pointed out that on the columns there's not even complete sentences. And he said, look, just, it's like bullet points. The first column is just the resentment, the person, the institution, or the principle. All you need is two or three words. The second column is the cause, two or three words. The third column is how it affects you or the condition. Is it self-esteem, pocketbook, security, ambition, personal relations, or sexual relations? Just jot that down. And then he said, there's not really a fourth column, but humor me. On page 67, we're going to look at mistake, fault, and blame. We call these character defects, things like selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, dishonesty. The 12 and 12 refers to the seven deadly sins: pride, greed, lust, gluttony, envy, sloth, anger. And then the book talks a lot about fear. And on page 67, there's something that is sometimes referred to as a prayer to the sick man. You know, am I willing to ask God to help me show this person that I resent patience, pity, and tolerance? Am I willing to forgive this person? And he gave me the instructions on the fear inventory, on the sexual misconduct inventory. He turned me loose. He said it should take me a couple weeks. It took me about 5 or 6 weeks. It took me a couple weeks to think about it and a couple weeks to do it. Because like the book says, it's simple but not easy. The simple part's the instruction. The not easy part is me and my ego, which tries to separate me from you. But I finally get this done. I show up at his house, and I'm going to read in the inventory. I'm going to do my fifth step. And even though we share in a general way, I want to tell the people that are new, the first person on my fifth step, because I want you to understand how simple this process can be. Okay, so I'm resentful at, two words, my father. Second column, the cause, two words, deserted me. Now, Michael's prepared for a long talk. He asked me some questions. I explained to him, I'm 4 or 5 years old. I'm growing up in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the early 60s. My father's in the Air Force. He leaves. He goes to Southeast Asia. He's probably over there when Thomas was there. He does a couple tours in the Air Force. He joins an outfit called Air America. He meets a Thai woman, Li Enthong. He marries her, apparently before he divorces my mother. I have a half-sister, Peck. I have never met Peck. I have never met Li Enthong. I'm 37 when I get sober. I'm 38 by the time I'm writing this inventory. And for over 3 decades, I've seen my father less than a handful of times, and I've gotten a couple postcards. He deserted me. Third column, what does it affect? Everything. Self-esteem, pocketbook, security, ambition, personal relations, sex relations. I mean, other than that, it's going pretty good, you know, but it's a big deal. It's one of these overarching resentments that my sponsor is aware of. He sees it, but I can't see it. I'm just reading this inventory to him. I identify these as my character defects. This is my fourth column. Anger. I'm still pretty pissed off. Fear. I have a lot of fear. You know, I'm afraid of relationships because in my mind, I showed my father love. He abused that. I can never let that happen again. There has to be a wall of insulation between me and you and you and me. It's not safe. And then I am not going to say the prayer to the sick man about my father or to my father. I am not going to forgive my father. No way, no how. I read this. I'm getting ready to go into the next person, and Michael stops me. He says, I want to make sure I understand this. You're resentful at your father, right? I said, yeah, that's right. And you've got some residual anger. You've got a lot of fear, and you do not want to forgive your father. I'm like, yeah, Michael, and I've read ahead. I know there's a ninth step. Not going to happen. No way. Never. He's like, well, look, we're just doing the fifth step now, but this is a program of willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness, and we're going to get to that. He goes, I do have a few more questions. So I'm like, well, what are they? He says, well, you remember you told me about your newcomer plan? Yeah. It involves some passports, yeah, and you were going to take these passports and go to Costa Rica, right? Yeah. And you've got a wife and you've got a daughter. Now, you never said to me that you were planning on deserting your wife and daughter, but is there a functional difference between what you were planning on doing and in what your father actually did. My first thought was, this is not going the way I thought it was going to go at all. And I put my head down and I muttered something to the effect, well, if you look at it that way. And if you're new, that's why in the fifth step we admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, because I can't look at it that way. I need somebody, in this case my sponsor, to hold a mirror up to me to reflect me back to me. Not a happy occasion. I go through, I do the rest of the inventory, I go home, I get quiet. You know, I go to page 75, I'm quiet, I flip the page to 76, I got to do 6 and 7. What's the big deal? It's just a couple paragraphs. You say a stupid prayer, you're done, right? That's what I did. I did a very superficial pass. 6 is a lot about willingness. 7 is a lot about humility. I had very little of either, but I'm really nervous about this. I'm just trying to move through this. They mean a lot more to me now, but they didn't at the time. I got to do this 8-step list. My sponsor wants me to do an 8-step. I go to page 76, and the book tells me we have a list of those we've harmed and to whom we're willing to make amends. We did it when we did our inventory. And I'm thinking, well, crap, if I'd have known that, I would have never put my father on the list, right? So like I said, I'm a lawyer. I'm flexible. I just took him off the list, right? I took him off the list. I complete the list. I go to my sponsor. He says, let me see the list. I show him the list. He says, your father's not on the list. I'm like, you're right. He's not. I told you he wasn't going to be on the list. He says, well, do you think you're any better than your father? I'm like, no, I don't. I got that. He goes, okay, what do you think about the Lord's Prayer? I'm like, what? The Lord's Prayer. What do you think of the Lord's Prayer? I don't have a problem. We say it a lot of times. At the end of the meeting, we say the Lord's Prayer. I'm okay with the Lord's Prayer. He goes, well, what about that clause in the Lord's Prayer? Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. What do you think of that? I think it's a damn trick question. That's what I think. I'm not stupid. It's a spiritual truth. It's a maxim. I got it. He goes, well, do you agree? I said, yeah, I see how that could work. Are you willing to do it? No. He takes me to page 99 in the 12 and 12, you know, the 11 step prayer. It's through forgiving that we are forgiven. You see how that could work? Yeah, absolutely. You willing to do it? Nope. Not going to happen. He says, well, look, step 6 and step 8 are a lot about willingness. Are you willing to pray for the willingness? Sure. Because you pray, I'll pray, we'll both pray. Meantime, start making amends. I start paying back the money. I make amends to the wife. I'm back in the big bed. I don't quite have the crossover privileges that I think I deserve. But things are going better. I get into this active 10-step process. You know, I'm trying to make prompt amends. I'm praying. I'm meditating. I'm trying to get into conscious contact with this God of my misunderstanding. And I got to tell you, when I got here, people were telling me to find God. And I'm thinking, I don't want to find God. I'm kind of hoping he doesn't find me. You know, you know, when Thomas talked, I don't talk about this a lot, but a lot of my amends were very, very complicated. When I was a Green Beret, my job essentially was to go to strange and exotic lands, meet strange and exotic people, and teach them how to kill each other. And this was not classroom instruction. And I'm the only guy that I've met that had to make amends to a country. And they always talk about you will not regret the past nor wish to close the door on it. I don't in relation to how I can help other people. But I did a lot of bad things to a lot of bad people. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people just because I could. And I don't know if there's ever going to be, you know, a day of judgment or whatever, and I may not make it on the list, but I know that right here, right now, there's things that I can do. And that's my job. And when I run into people that have those types of situations, I want them to understand that there's a way out. You know, there's a way out of self. There's a way through helping other people that you can be relieved of the burden of the pain and suffering that you've inflicted. Because some of us have done some really bad stuff. That's just the nature of it. And I'm working on this 12-step process. I'm trying to practice the principles in all my affairs. I'm apparently, I'm carrying the message because there's a bunch of chuckleheads that are asking me to sponsor them. I'm taking them through this book. They're getting sober. They're taking other guys through the book. We got this whole merry band of miscreants, but I am not making amends to my father. And this goes on for a period of years. And then I have a conversation with my sponsor, Michael, and I tell him, I'm just telling him that I'm not going to be around for a while. I got to go up to Anchorage, Alaska to do some depositions to get ready for a trial. I'm going to miss my home group on Monday night, but I'll be back midweek, maybe the end of the week. He lights up like a Christmas tree. He gets all excited. He goes, that's great. You'll make amends to your father. I'd forgotten that I'd told him my father at the time was living in Wasilla, Alaska, which is right outside of Anchorage. So now my sponsor's connecting two clearly unrelated dots. And if you're new there, we'll do that. They take notes. Stuff comes up like years later. It's annoying as hell, right? So I'm waving him off. I'm like, whoa, no. This is business, Michael. This has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's like, everything has everything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he says, God's talking. Can't you hear him? Frankly, no. No, I'm not getting the memo. He says, look, you pray and meditate every morning. I want you to pray and meditate and ask God for guidance and direction. And I do. I follow direction. 3, 4, 5 days into it, what comes to me, it's not like, you know, God talked to me or anything. I just realized this is something that I should do, in part because I realized I am a hypocrite. I got all these guys I'm sponsoring. I'm telling them to go make, and I won't do what I'm telling them to do. So I go to Michael. I go, okay, Michael, I'll do it. What do I do? Without skipping a beat, he goes, I don't know. I'm not going up there. Talk to God. Oh, man, you're killing me. I used to call him the cosmic cupcake, the mystic muffin. Didn't matter what the problem was, the solution was always God. So I go up there, and I see my father, and I make amends. And a son was returned to a father, and a father to a son, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I never thought I could do it. And when I first got there, I didn't even know what to do, so I just grabbed him, and I hugged him. And he buried his head right here in my chest, and he cried, and I cried, and forgiveness occurred. And I had some subsequent conversation with him. He never made amends to me, by the way. I just made amends to him at the time. But he's not in AA. And, you know, I restored that relationship. And by the way, once I did that, things got better with a wife and other things. It's really interesting how a lot of that stuff is related, that the sponsor sees, but the sponsee can't see it. And a little over a year ago, January 18th of 2021, he died. He'd been sick for quite some time, and he had congestive heart failure, and he's up in Anchorage, and he can't, because he didn't have COVID, but because of COVID restrictions, no, I couldn't see him. Leanne Thong couldn't go see him. Peck couldn't go see him. But we could talk to him on the phone, and we had taught him how to FaceTime. But he was 87, almost 88 years old. He wasn't very techno-savvy. And so the object with FaceTime is to look at the phone, right? But he couldn't hear very well. So I would have these two-hour conversations with my father's hairy ear, you know? And before he died, he made amends to me. It wasn't a very good amends. I mean, it wasn't a very good AA amends. I mean, I'm just saying, if I had sponsored him, I'd told him it was inadequate. But this was my father. This was my father, and it was perfect. And before he died, he said he loved me, and I said I loved him, and I meant it. And I never thought that would ever happen. And that's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and only because of people like you. And I, you know, I joke about people, but like, I remember Thomas. Thomas was nice to me. I mean, he saw me when I was new, and I probably must have amused the hell out of you, Thomas, but you were always very, you just told me it'd be okay. Come with us, you'll be okay, and you were right. And I know that this thing works, this forgiveness, not because you explained it to me, because you showed it to me and you walked me through it, and I know it works because in 2016, so it's like almost 6 years ago, I got shot. And I've been shot before. I was shot once when I was in the Army, but that was minor. This was pretty significant. I was up in Badger, California, and I was, I'd had breakfast. It was a Saturday morning. Are you laughing? This isn't the funny part, man. Come on. Jeez. You guys are rough, you know? And so I'm sitting on my bed minding my own business, and the guy upstairs from me decided it would be a good opportunity to clear his Glock 9mm weapon, which is ordinarily not a problem, but he forgot a rather significant step. He didn't remove the magazine. So when he pulled the slide back and he jacked around, he shot me. It went through the ceiling, and it entered right above my heart, and it lodged in my sternum. That'll get your attention, you know? And I got to tell you, This is, you know, we talk about serenity, but the first word out of my mouth, I kind of yelped a shortened version of fire truck, okay? And a guy from upstairs comes running downstairs, and he's like, what happened? I'm like, you shot me. That's what happened. And this guy starts freaking out. Because I got this bloody towel on me. He's, you know, who knows what could happen. He's freaking out. And then I did something really bizarre that's not my nature. I try to calm him down. And that's because of you. That's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've been shot, so I tell him, you got to take me down. We go to the hospital. I go through the emergency room. I get checked up. They do an overhead x-ray. They decide that, I've got this round lodged in my chest. And it's still there, by the way. And they tell me, the cardiothoracic surgeon tells me, look, you're gonna have to see a cardiologist because you're going to need some treatment for this because you got an atrial flutter. We did an EKG, you got an atrial flutter. So I get released. I go down to where I live. In Redondo Beach, I go to the Torrance Memorial Medical Center. I see Dr. Carlson, cardiologist. He does an EKG. He says, yeah, you've got an atrial flutter. He goes, look, there's a procedure for this. It's called a cardioversion, and it works most of the time. You've seen in the movies how they'll take the paddles and they'll shock a guy? I'm like, yeah? He goes, well, that's barbaric. We would never do that to you. What we're going to do with you is we're going to tape these pads to your chest that are hooked to electrodes, and then we're going to hit you with a jolt of electricity. We will wait 5 to 7 seconds, and then we will hit you with another jolt of electricity. Your heart will start, and hopefully it'll be in sync. And I'm like, you know, doc, I am not that quick on the uptake, but that sounds like you're going to kill me. He's like, oh, no, we don't like to look at it that way. It's a control procedure. I've done it hundreds of times, and by the way, there will be an anesthesiologist that will give you something that will make you comfortable before the procedure. So I'm an alcoholic. I go from, you're going to kill me, to I am going to get comfortable. And it's not that I haven't been comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I haven't been this kind of comfortable in, you know, 20 years. I figure it's a free pass. My sponsor will be okay. Okay, doc, sign me up. I show up. I got the gown on. I got the IV in me. Dr. Carlson's here. The anesthesiologist walks in. He's got a syringe of comfortable. And I am watching him all the way across the room because he's my new best friend, right? And he leans over. He's having a conversation with me. And the next thing I know, Dr. Carlson's leaning over. He's like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm good, doc. I'm good. He goes, well, how do you feel? I'm fine. I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's do the procedure. He goes, oh, no. We did the procedure. The procedure's over. I think it went pretty well. I'm like hell, where's the guy who was going to make me comfortable? I didn't get comfortable. You promised me I was going to get him. I am arguing with my cardiologist about general anesthesia. Okay. And if you're young, you won't understand this, but the old people will realize that, you know, back in the old days, when they would give you general anesthesia, they would have you count back from 100. You know, and that was an interesting little journey because it'd be like 199, 90, you know. And there's no 99 to 98. They got this stuff called propofol now, which is really, it's bad dope. And because you're here and then you're here. There's no there. But the best part about this story is, when I got shot, I was on an AA retreat. Yeah. There's hope for the newcomer, right? Yeah. And I was leading the retreat. I'd given a talk the night before on unity, which I thought was rather compelling. I don't think the guy that shot me was paying attention. I got shot on a Saturday morning. Saturday night, I was supposed to talk about acceptance and forgiveness. But the very best part is the guy that shot me, I sponsor him. I sponsored him then, and I sponsor him now. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because before I got here, I made a lot of mistakes. And since I've been here, I've made a lot of mistakes. That's what the steps are for. That's what the fellowship is for. My friend Bill C. says, we come into AA, we take off the clown suit. We do. But we don't throw it away. We hang it up. We take it out from time to time. And I got to tell you, if you're new, there's a part on page 87 that talks about not drifting into morbid reflection. That's a key. If you can't laugh at yourself and others, this is going to be a rough journey. You know, if you're new, you're sitting there, you're thinking, God, I'm new. Apparently, there's somebody with one day. You got to be sitting there thinking, this sucks. You're probably trapped between two old timers. You can't make it out. You know, and you're thinking it sucks. I'd like to tell you that's not true, but it does suck being new. It does. It's the price of admission. We've all paid it. I can tell you that if you lean into it and you do what we do, after a while we'll be entertaining. We are actually, there's nothing weirder than Alcoholics Anonymous. Reality TV's got nothing on this. You know, and I gotta tell you, I like to think of AA like God's amusement park. So bear with me. This is what I mean. It's like, you're in the park. Now, the price of admission to the park is really high. It's very expensive. Nobody asked you if you wanted to pay. You're an alcoholic, so we reach right up into your soul. You pay the price. You're in the park. You can stay in the park. You can leave the park. You'll notice in the park that there's these things called meetings. There's also these things called rides, the 12 steps. There's 12 of them. And there are some old-timers that are hanging around the rides. People in the meeting seems to be pretty happy. The people by the ride seem to be really happy. They think life is hilarious. And they're telling you to, you know, come on, take the ride. You don't have to take the ride. You don't have to go to the meeting. You can leave the park. But God's amusement park is like these very, very, very expensive parking structures. There's no in-and-out privileges. You may not be able to pay the price of readmission. But have fun in the park. Look around. But I got to tell you, if you really pay attention, you'll see that the people that are taking the rides, that are taking the steps, are really the most comfortable people in the park. And they're going to encourage you to do that. They'll tell you to throw your hands in the air and yell and hoot and holler, and they'll tell you where to duck and cover because you'll need to do both. And if you go through this process and you go through and take these rides and take these steps, you'll be by the rides and you'll be telling the next person, come take the ride. So if you're new, I hope you stay, and I hope you take the ride. Thanks for having me.
Friday, birthdays at this meeting for every 365 days of continuous sobriety. We give a cake with the appropriate number of candles on it. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything which affects you from the neck up. If you're a regular attender of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please see me at the door, and then if you're taking a cake, just line up. Wow, we have a lot of cakes tonight. Okay, that's good. If you're taking a cake online, email Kimberly K at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org by noon on Wednesday. That's the deadline. Hybrid birthdays will be shown after the in-person birthdays. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our cake. And at the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. As you well know, we got a letter from them last week thanking us for all the contributions. So it's really important we do that. And see my assistants at the door when you sign up to take your cake. Now we are going, if you're participating online, please arrange for this with our treasurer, Lon B, at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. And now we're going to sing Happy Birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back. Our first birthday is for Drake K for 1 year. I'm going to put this on. Oh, it's Liam? What? Why does it say Drake? Okay, it's not Drake, it's Liam. Okay.
How come? Drake, alcoholic, sorry. Liam, alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, my sponsor Mark, Clancy for the structure, PG, AA, and all of you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just a little confused. Yeah, I'm a lot confused. Hold on. So, hello. I was on the wrong page. I'm very sorry. Okay, our second birthday is for Daniel S. for 2 years.
Dan, financial alcoholic. Thank you, the guy upstairs who I call God. Thank you, my sponsor, Larry. The men I talk to regularly, including my boss house, the newcomers. Thank you for the speakers, and thank you to the old man himself, Clancy, JW, and of course, the original foundation of the Road Dogs. Love you guys.
Our next birthday is for 4 years for Paul D.
Thank you, Mary, for letting me take a cake. I'm Paul. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank the Pacific Group, Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, my sponsor, David B., and my previous sponsor, Mark D. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 8 years from Meg S.
Hi, I'm Meg. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my beautiful sponsor, Teresa M., for her example, my former sponsor, Kitty B., Kenna, my sponsee sisters, this lady, for her amazing example, all of her sponsees, my friends, class of 2014, what? And Clancy, we would not be here without him, and he has been easy, irreplaceable, and my amazing husband, Brett. So thanks.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Migs. 9 years for Karen T.
Karen, alcoholic. Thank you. Thank you, Mary, for allowing me to take this cake. I would like to thank God. I would like to thank Joyce, my sponsor, my previous sponsors, PG, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 18 years for George S.
Hi, everybody. My name is George, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, Clancy for the structure, my sponsor, Jeff, my tragedy buddy, Phil, Harvey, all the Zoomers, and PG. Thank you. I love you.
Our next birthday is for 21 years for Ross E.
I'd like to thank Mary and the group here. My name's Ross. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Mary and the group here for allowing me to take a cake tonight. I'd like to thank Friday Night Men Stag. Thank you. Thank you. And I'd like to thank my previous sponsor, Joe Sandusky, who was a great member of this group and of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to thank my current sponsor, Matt Tricky, for allowing me to, for helping me and guiding me and giving me a cake tonight. And I'd like to thank Clancy for this, for the Pacific Group and its structure. Program of Alcoholics Anonymous and God for my life. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 37 years for Brian A.
My name is Brian, I'm an alcoholic, and I would like to thank God. I'd like to thank the class of 85. I'd like to thank the tape crew, PG players, the Pacific Group, my beautiful wife Sarah, for the adventure we're about to embark on, and I really want to thank Tom. He's been my friend for 30 years. He's been my sponsor for many. He's my definition of what a good man is. They say pick somebody that you want to be. I'd like to be Tom someday. Thanks.
Thank you. au revoir, Brian. And for 41 years, our last birthday, Olivia M.
I made it. Olivia, I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my sponsor for another incredible year of her guidance. She's been tough with me because I need it. And I've always said that she's been mean. And I say that lovingly because I know that she wants me to stay here. I want to thank Teresa Munoz for doing so much for me. She's always there when I need help. Class of 81, there's three of us here. And all my sober AA sisters. I also want to welcome the newcomers that are here. Welcome you, and please come back, and this program really works. I have a wonderful life today. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Olivia. And our online birthday, we have a birthday for 30 years for Pat C. And her sponsor is Sharon Crane. Okay, let's see, hold on. I think we have a few special announcements.